Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here again tonight. We're going to start in 1380 BC and go to about 721 BC. What we're going to cover is we've got Joshua has taken over the lead of the people after Moses has left him in the leadership position. Joshua's going to bring him into the land. They're going to have the major campaigns. We're going to have the entrance campaign, the southern campaign, the northern campaign. They're going to take the land. And after Joshua, they're going to give way. After his death, they're going to have leaders arise. The land is divided up into... do you have another copy? Please, thank you. The land is divided up into... the areas for the tribes, we'll look at that. And each tribe, the concept is that there is the Lord. The Lord is in the tabernacle. There is a priesthood. The people can follow the law. Remember we talked last week, they've got us in the law of Moses, it's a civil law. It's the rules for society. In the law of Moses, it's a moral code. And it tells you how to behave, and that would be absolute. It's not like going to switch. Civil law can change. Moral law is going to be absolute. And then there's going to be the sacrificial law, the tabernacle law, in case, like to have fellowship with God. So with this being given to the people, they're supposed to know this. The priests are, and the Levites are the teaching tribe. The Levites, tribe of Levites, the teaching tribe. They're stationed throughout the land. They're to be reminding the people, teaching the people, and then they'll go and they've got seven yearly a feast where they go to the tabernacle, which is at Shiloh, and they meet the Lord there. So, I mean, you think this is a beautiful system. We're all adults here. We all know the laws of the land. We all know the moral code. We're going to be taught by it, reminded of it by the Levites. We have a problem as far as sin. We have, sacrifices for sin. We have fellowship offerings. The priest will take care of all of that, and the Lord will be the king. Well, the tribes don't follow. The tribes end up following the ways of the people they're supposed to drive out. They follow the ways of the world. They have the false philosophy. We'd have the same thing today, the false philosophies, the ideas of the world. That's not the way the reality is. And God's established reality for them. This is the way it's going to work. So the tribes, they end up having problems. They end up going into sin. They're going to be invaded by the other the nations that they haven't driven out. They're going to be living in sin. They're going to have civil breakdowns. They're going to have moral failures. They're going to have failures in the temple or the tabernacle. The priesthood is going to end up becoming converted. And they're going to end up having to be delivered out of situations. They're going to be invaded by different people. And then local tribes, local chieftains will rise up and drive out the enemy, and the Lord will try to speak to the people and lead them. But it just continues. It's just the cycle going around and around and around. Eventually, they're going to ask for the people to say, we want a king. Our problem is we don't have a king. Yes, you do. You've got a king who spoke to you, gave you the whole system. Just follow the system. But we want a king like everybody else. So God says, okay, and he's going to give them Saul. And Saul is going to be a king. Now, again, you know there's a problem right away if you've been paying attention. He's from the tribe of Benjamin, and the king comes from the tribe of Judah. And so he ends up having problems, and he goes astray. He follows Samuel's the one who anoints him, but he ends up becoming, like a typical political king. He's more about himself than following the Lord. And God rejects him and says, I'll find a man after my own heart. And then he goes off and he finds a young shepherd boy named David. And David is, of course, from the tribe of Judah, and he is the forerunner of the Messiah. David's going to then do his things. He's going to have a son named Solomon, and that's not necessarily the first choice. There's Absalom, and Absalom killed. David had several sons. Absalom's going to kill Amnon, and then Absalom's going to have to go away, and David's going to have an affair with Bathsheba, who's going to end up having a baby named Solomon. And so it's like, what? The lady he had an affair with has the son who's going to become the king. Well, Solomon's going to be a type of Christ. He's going to set up the kingdom. He follows David, but he doesn't live morally. He's going to have wisdom, but he's going to make a lot of mistakes. He's going to get the nation into debt. And when he dies, his son Rehoboam becomes king. And the people, and you notice this as this goes through, the people beg, when Rehoboam comes king, they ask, well, You can be our king, because he's David's grandson, Solomon's son. You can be the king, but can you just lower the taxes? Because Solomon, you know, in his wisdom, he worked the nation into debt. I mean, we could talk about all these, have great stories behind him. He's in trouble with Hiram, where he supposedly paid for a bunch of material, and he can't pay it back. So he said, well, I'll give you these three or four cities. And when Hiram goes out to look at him, he calls them good for nothing. He says, these are good for nothing. And well, Solomon gave him, you know, some rundown territory to pay his debts. And Solomon's going to have caravans that are out looking for gold, because he's worked himself into debt. Not only that, but he also married a bunch of foreign women. He has a harem, and he's got a bunch of foreign women, and he marries Pharaoh's daughter. She wants a temple for her god. So he built the temple for God, but he also built some temples for the pagan gods too. So Solomon is completely, we like to talk about him being wise, and he was, but he ended up switching the wisdom of the Lord for the wisdom of man. And his son Rehoboam now is going to be king. The people say, just, can you give us a break for our taxes? And Rehoboam goes and asks the older men, the elders, and they say, listen, your father was off his rocker. I mean, he was driving these people into the ground. If you just give them a tax break, they'll be yours forever. But he asked the young guys, you know, the guys he went to school with, played with on the recess, on the playground. And they say, oh, you just tell those people, they don't push you around. You tell them that your father whipped them with whips, but you're going to whip them with scorpions. And when he says that, he says, yeah, these old guys, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to be an authoritative figure. And when he says that to the 12 tribes, 10 of the tribes say, we're out of here. Men each to your own tent. And they all went back, and 10 tribes rebelled against him, and choose a guy named Jeroboam, who was Solomon's foreman, who built the temple. He was in charge. He was the one who oversaw and planned the building of the temple, the palace. He was a great builder for Solomon. He ends up becoming the king of this new group, the northern 10 tribes, which is going to be called, again, I'm getting pretty sloppy here, they're going to be called Israel. Now, this is, you're going to have to understand this. They're going to be called the nation of Israel. But Rehoboam keeps the tribe, his tribe, which is the tribe of Judah, the kingly tribe, and the tribe right next to him, a small tribe that right next to him, the tribe of Benjamin. That becomes the nation of Judah and Benjamin. It becomes known as Judah. So now you've got two nations of Israelites. You've got the northern 10 tribes called Israel. You've got the southern tribe called Judah, or the southern nation. Israel is going to follow Jeroboam. Jeroboam is going to have a great idea. He's good at building temples, so the first thing he's going to do is set up a temple in the far north of his country, in the city of Dan, and a temple right on the border at Bethel, right on the border of Judah and the northern 10 tribes at Bethel. And he's going to build a temple and set a golden calf at each one. And he's going to tell the nation of Israel, these are the gods that led you out of Egypt, not that god they got down there in Judah. And people go, oh, yay, yay. So now you've got 10 tribes worshiping the golden calf at Dan and Bethel. And that's going to become a series of disaster. And that's where we're going to end up going through here tonight, if that makes sense. We're going to go from 1380, when Joshua dies and the judges take place. After they get through, there's not going to be any solid leadership. It's just territorial, trying to stay alive. Saul's going to become king and unite the 12 tribes. That's going to collapse. David's going to become king. And then Solomon's going to drive that into poverty. Then they're going to have the split. And we'll talk about in 721. By 721, God is finished with the northern 10 tribes of Assyria. The northern 10 tribes of Israel, called Israel. And the Assyrians are going to be brought in through a series of events. And the Assyrians are going to take them captive. They're not going to take them captive in the sense where the Babylonian captivity, they go to Babylon as a nation and they release and come back. They're going to be taken and dispersed into the north, into the south. They're going to be taken to the east. And they're called, today we remember them as the lost 10 tribes of Israel. Now, because of the invasion of the Assyrians, in the 720s BC, northern Israel doesn't know what to do because they're repeatedly being invaded by Assyrians, or people being deported. Kings are being assassinated, the Israelite kings in the north. And so many of the people flee the northern 10 tribes down to Jerusalem during Hezekiah's reign. And it, in fact, the city grows so fast that he has to expand the city and build another wall. He has to dig the Hezekiah's tunnel that you can still walk through today to get water to the new part of the city, because so many people are fleeing northern Israel and coming back home to Judah, to Hezekiah. So that by the time the northern 10 tribes are taken gone, all 12 tribes are represented in Judah at some level. So in a sense, they're not lost, like, well, we lost 10 of the tribes. They're dispersed, and they intermarried with other nations and become what we call, you know, Gentiles. But some of them were still there. All 12 tribes end up going into Babylonian captivity. But they disperse them. The northern 10 tribes are dispersed. And that's where I wore an Assyrian shirt tonight. Not that I'm cheering for the Assyrians. Okay, on your notes, right here. I think we want to look on this page one right here, first of all. And there you've got a list of the timeline. And that's where I start. And I hope this works for us. This is not on your notes there. This is Ahab's age. When Ahab dies is 853. Okay, this goes backwards. Moses, 1446, 1406, Joshua enters the land. David's first year as king is probably right around 1011. David conquers Jerusalem in 1004 BC. And then Solomon's first year is 971 BC. Solomon builds a temple in 967, 66 BC. Jeroboam's first year, that's when he builds the golden calves, 931 BC. Jeroboam's 18th year, his 20th year, 912. Nadab, Jeroboam's son, his first year as king of the northern 10 tribes, 911. Then you've got Baasha's, Elah's, Zimri's first year, Omri's first year, Ahab's first year, and Ahab dies in 853. That's just kind of a timeline going through that. You got some references. Now what you see there is what you've got. That's not even it. That's a bigger one. All right. Okay, I don't know. I know I've got it on there somewhere. This right here is the 12 tribes. We saw this last week. Here's Judah. You don't have to remember this, but what's important is here's Judah. There's the tribe of Benjamin. So right here, Benjamin and Judah become the southern nation of Judah. Then Dan is supposed to be right here. Dan has to fight the Philistines. And they're like, this is too hard. So they go, let's go somewhere else. So they send out a scout, like Joshua sent, or Moses sent out scouts, 12. Joshua sent out spies when he came to land. They send out spies and just go find a place that's easy. So they go way up here. They say, hey, there's an unsuspecting people living up here, a place called Lachish. And they went up there and they drove them all out. And they said, well, they didn't. They went up there and found them, come back and tell the people of Dan they're easy picking. So they march all the way across the land of Israel and destroy the city here and call it Dan. And they find an easier place to live. And they leave this to the Philistines. So that's how Israel starts solving their problems. Ephraim, Manasseh, they're on both sides. Issachar, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali. Those are the 12 tribes. This is what we're looking at here on that paper. At the top of that paper, these are the books of the Old Testament. Genesis and Job sequentially, that's the chronological order. I think Job takes place during Genesis. Again, it's not dated there, but you look at the age span and the culture. Then Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, though we understand that. Then Joshua takes place after the time of Moses. And now we're into, after Joshua dies, the leadership, we just talked about that's going to record Judges. The book of Ruth, Ruth is a member of the culture of the Judges. Ruth takes place during Judges. And of course, Ruth is a Moabite who marries into the family, but that whole family, that whole situation takes place during Judges. Then there's going to be a lady named Hannah who doesn't have a child, and she's going to go to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and she's going to be praying. And now, again, there's so many things that we could read through and give you the text. But she's praying at the tabernacle, and she's crying and weeping, and she's interceding because she wants a child. And Eli, the priest, he comes up and tells her, he says, why are you drunk women in the tabernacle? He thinks she's drunk. Now, if you go to a church and you see a woman praying, and your first thought is, another drunk woman here in church. What's going on in your church? The first time you see a woman's weeping and crying, you think, well, she's drunk. If I go to Hy-Vee and I see a woman crying, I don't think she's drunk. I think, you know, the cart ran over her foot, you know, something happened. She does that. I don't think, well, she's drunk. My point, by this time, the culture of the judges was so corrupt, the priesthood was so corrupt, the tabernacle was so corrupt, that if there's a woman there crying and praying to God, they don't think, oh, I bet she's praying. Maybe I'll join her in prayer. They think, what have you been? I'm not drunk. I'm praying. It's like, oh, we don't have much of that going on here. And then you find out Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they're corrupt. They had women working in the tabernacle. Now, do you remember when Moses had that group of women that joined the tabernacle and did sacrifices and offerings and drank the wine? No, because they're the men. They're the priesthood, the Levites. They had wives, and the women were members of the tribe of Levi, but the men were the priests were men. The Levite that were doing the service were men. But, you know, when you go to these pagan cultures, they always have women in there also. And what do? Well, they serve as temple prostitutes. You worship your God through sex, you know. It's like, what? I think if you read clearly, Moses says, this is not what we're going to do. That's why we're driving out these other nations. Well, by this time, there were Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, it says in the text in 1 Samuel, were sleeping with the temple women. It's like, what temple women? It's like there shouldn't even be women in the temple. In fact, when you get to the temple, the tabernacle, and when you get up here on the Temple Mount, there was the court of men, and there was the court for women, and there was the court for the Gentiles. And it's not like they're second rate. They just kept them separate. Nonetheless, Hannah's there praying, and she says, I want a son. So Samuel, Eli, you know, blesses her or whatever. And she goes home, and she conceives and has a son, and she dedicates his name Samuel, and she dedicates him to the temple. And Samuel then is going to grow up. He's not a member of the Levitical tribe, but he's going to grow up in the temple, taking care of the temple under the authority of these wicked priests. But God is going to begin to speak to him about the age of 12. God is going to speak to him, and Samuel is going to become a prophet. And he's going to anoint Saul, and Saul will fail. He'll anoint David. And then you got the whole book of 1 and 2 Samuel that takes place through here. And then 2 Samuel, about this time, this is when Solomon begins to reign in 1 Kings. And that's going to take place 971. You got Song of Solomon, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. Those are books accredited to Solomon. I think Proverbs is a little more expanded. There's many more involved in that. But see, now we're up to 940, 931, Ecclesiastes. And again, Ecclesiastes is a great book. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. And again, you can see there's a truth to it. But you can see the angle that Solomon's writing it from is he's left the wisdom of God and has gone into the wisdom of man. He's now trying to figure out the world without the perspective of God and doing it yourself. It's like, this just isn't going to work. It's just emptiness over and over. It's like, right, why don't you go back to the truth? And again, there's truth within there, but it's the truth saying you don't want to do this alone. And then this continues, then 2 Kings, you got 853 to 860. And then just as I've just got these marked here, these are the prophets. Here, this is the last of the historical account we'll go through today. But Joel, Amos, Hosea, even Isaiah, Jonah, and Micah were all prophets, well, along with Elijah and including Elijah and Elisha were prophets to the people of Israel saying, don't keep going the way you're going. They try to turn them back. So there's many interesting things in those books. And we've talked through all those verse by verse. Okay, the next thing, here is your kings. Okay, once we get to the kings of Israel, we know where Jeroboam comes from. He was the builder for Solomon. He is not related to the tribe of Judah. He is not supposed to be the king. There's only supposed to be a nation of Israel, supposed to be the well, you're supposed to be the nation of Israel, but all 12 tribes working in unison. But the northern 10 become the nation of Israel. He becomes the first king. He has a son named Nadab. Now, just before we go through this, again, this is a lot of names, but I'm trying to catch the concept here. These are the kings of the nation of northern 10 tribes of Israel, going from 930, when Solomon died and Rehoboam lost the 10 tribes, from 930 to 721, when the Assyrians drive them into, just scatter them around the world, to the four winds of heaven. Okay, so 930 to 721. These are the kings that ruled the northern 10 tribes. A lot of stories here. There are 20 kings in Israel. So there's 20 kings. There's 9 different dynasties. Meaning, a father has a son, that's a dynasty. A father has a son, they have a grandson, that's a dynasty. Or you got 4 generations, that's a dynasty. You've got, do the math, 20 kings from 930 to, well, just say 730, so about 200 years. It's actually 721, so you say 210 years. In 210 years, you've got 20 kings and 9 dynasties. Well, what happened to those families? They were assassinated. There's 20 kings, 9 dynasties, 6 assassinations, and 2 coups where they overthrow the king. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, those are the 9 dynasties. So Jeroboam, Nadab, your first dynasty, a new king, Baasha, and his son Elah, then they get overthrown. Zimri, and then he gets killed. Oh, no. Oh, I got to stop waving my hands around. Oh, there you go. Did you see that? Oh, okay. Zimri gets killed. Timna gets killed. And then Omri, this is going to be one of the great dynasties, evil, but it's Ahab's dynasty. You know Ahab, you know, married Jezebel. I want to tell some political jokes there, contemporary, but that just, let's not offend all the viewers. Omri has a son named Ahab, has a son named Ahaziah, has a son named Joram. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 generations. You find the 4 cycles of discipline happening in their life. That's during Elijah's time. Elijah speaks to them. Joram is, Jehu is anointed by a guy named Jonah, because Jonah was a prophet. We know Jonah getting on a ship, running and getting swallowed by a whale. But Jonah's going to have a prophecy spoken to these guys on what's going to take place. Jonah is going to anoint Jehu on the other side of the Jordan, because he's one of the generals, that he's going to be the next king. Jehu's going to go back and kill Joram and set up a new dynasty, and he's going to kill all the prophets of Baal. He's going to clean house. That's Jehu. He's going to be very, very successful at first. But his son, Jehu, his son is Jehoahaz, Jehoash, and Jeroboam II, and Zechariah. So that fades away, and then you're going to have Assyria. Now, by this time, the nation is in judgment. It's over, and the Assyrians are influencing them. In fact, Jehu is, I'll show you, he's on an image of him carved on an obelisk. I saw it at the British Museum, of him paying tribute to Shalmaneser, the Assyrian king. And so that we got a picture of Jehu. And it's not like a forgery. It's not a biblical. It's not by the Jews. It's not by the Christians. It's by the Assyrians, because he was one of many kings that paid tribute and tells you what he was bringing. We'll look at that. But that's Jehu, and he was anointed by Jonah. Okay, these guys just killed, two guys killed, gets killed, Hoshea, and these guys are trying to work for the Assyrians. Anyway, that's that story right there of the kings of Israel. What else we got here? There's 7 great empires in the ancient world. We're going to be looking at tonight the Assyrian Empire. We've seen the Egyptian Empire, but also the Hittite Empire was to the north. I'll show you a map here. And people mock that for years, the Hittite Empire, that because they're talking about the Hittites in the Bible. There's no Hittites. No one knows where the Hittites are. Until they uncovered the library and the entire empire was uncovered. It's like, oh my gosh, whoever wrote Genesis and Exodus, they were there. They saw it, because it's not recorded in history until they dug it out and found cuneiform tablets. Then the Assyrian Empire, 745 to 612, that's going to be overthrown by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian Empire. Now, that's coming up next week. And then the Persians overthrow them. They're the ones that send Judah back from captivity with Cyrus. And then the Greeks, Alexander the Great, comes through, and then that morphs into the Roman Empire. But anyway, we're looking right here. Those are the 7 empires, and here are the empires. We've seen the empire, Egyptian Empire, and the Hittite Empire. Kind of looks like one of Paul's missionary journeys up here. It's through Syria, Asia Minor. This is the Assyrian Empire that we're going to be dealing with, and it's going to just keep expanding. It's going to even come down and take Egypt. Here's the major judges. Othniel is from the tribe of Judah. Ehud. Then there's the story of Deborah and General Barak. Gideon. You've heard of Gideon. I can tell you these stories as we shoot through here. Jephthah. And then Samson. These are some guys that we'd hear of. These are some minor judges. They all have a story about them. Shamgar, Tola, Jair, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Now, they weren't kings. Sometimes they acted like kings. They're more like warriors. But a lot of times they're just farmers. Gideon was just a son of the mayor of the city, you know, the governor of the city, whoever was leading. And he was hiding in a wine press making bread. He's hiding in a wine press making bread. And when he's making bread, he's not cooking it. He's sifting the grain. And so when we talk about, like, right here, this used to be this Temple Mount area right here, Mount Moriah, used to be a threshing floor because there's breeze up there. They'd throw the grain in the air. The bad stuff would go away. The husk would blow away and the seed would fall to the ground. And they'd thresh the grain in an open area in the wind. Gideon is going to be threshing in a wine press. And a wine press is down in the valley where the vines are. They pick them and then they press the juice and make wine out of it. But there's no breeze. And it's covered up by vines. He's afraid, and God tells him, you know, the great story there, you're the mighty man of God, and he doesn't know who he's talking to. Then, of course, then that story grows, and then he fails. Samson, we'll look at that real quickly. And then, anyway, those are the judges we'll be looking at before we get to the kings. Here's the cycle. I showed you this last week of the society in the book of Judges. When they're thankful and serving God, things are good. They then become self-sufficient. You can see this taking place. It's repeated over and over. Solomon himself does this. He can write Psalms. He can write Proverbs. He's the son of David. He builds the temple. But then he marries a bunch of women. He marries the Pharaoh's daughter. And it's like, well, you know what? I can build a temple for your God too. And he becomes self-sufficient. He got so much money. He can make plans and it gets done, forgets God. And then he ends up in the seeking pleasure. Now you're in the book of Ecclesiastes, trying to find pleasure. Ends up in oppression, slavery. His people end up in oppression and slavery. They're begging to be released from their taxation. They cry to God, but the deliverance doesn't come. In this case, in the book of a story about Solomon, it doesn't come. They split nations. But in the book of Judges, Gideon will arise and set them free. And they're all good, and then they go right back to here. Or Deborah and Barak will arise and set the people free. Deborah's a great story of a woman who was the judge, and she goes to her general, Barak, is it's time to go up and fight the Canaanites. And he says, I'll only go if you'll go. Are you going to go? She goes, well, you're the general. But yeah, I'm paraphrasing. And he goes, I won't go unless you go. She says, okay, because your attitude, you won't get the victory of killing the general Sisera of the Canaanites. That honor will go to a woman. Well, in the flat of the battle as it takes place, Sisera flees and it goes to a tent of a woman named Jael. There are metal workers that help make their iron chariots. And he flees to her tent where her husband worked for him, but he's away. And he goes, hide me because I've lost the battle. And so she gives him he says, can you have some water? She gives him milk, and which means she tried to make him feel like he's really comfortable. And he goes to sleep. And while he's asleep, she takes a tent peg, and those are those long spikes that hold up the tents, and a mallet, and just pins his head to the ground. And so that's that story of Deborah. So there's some, again, many great stories coming here. This is the priesthood. If you just want to see this, it ends up splitting into two groups. You're supposed to have a high priest and his son. They just continue down. Because of confusion, Aaron has a son named Eleazar and he has a grandson named Phinehas. Phinehas does something very similar. I talked about it last week when the Moabites sent their women into the camp of the Israelites, and the men began to worship their gods and have sexual relations with the Moabites. And that was, what's his name, the prophet from up north, you know, rode the donkey, spoke. Balaam. Balaam had told, his prophecy didn't work, but he said, I know how to get God to strike the people, get them to commit fornication, worship other gods, and then there's a huge amount of men were slayed in a plague. And Phinehas, to stop the plague, goes into a man's tent and pins the man and the Moabite woman to the ground. And so, if you know, again, you want the image, I mean, we can make a movie about it if you wanted to. And that stops the plague, and this becomes one of the lines of priests. It goes all the way up to the time of the Greeks. This is Antiochus in 175 BC, Onias. Jason sells the priesthood out. But there's also Ithamar, and he has a son named Eli, or eventually has a son named Eli, and two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. Both these people are killed in battle, and we'll talk about that. And his wife goes into labor. Phinehas' wife goes into labor when she hears the news that her husband's been killed by the Philistines. She goes into labor and gives birth to a son named Ichabod, which means the glory is gone. The glory is gone because the Ark of the Covenant had been taken. They kept losing battles, so they said, well, what we'll do, we'll take the Ark of the Covenant out, and God will have to fight for us. And God says, no, and they get slaughtered, and the Philistines take the Ark. And that's kind of a fun story, because when the Philistines take the ark, they put it in front of their god Dagon in the temple, and Dagon falls over the first night. They stand him back up. The next night, he falls over and breaks his arms off, and they end up breaking out in tumors and hemorrhoids. It says hemorrhoids and sores, and they end up sending it to another city, and every city goes, oh, you know, we're sick. We don't want it. And so they pass around all five cities, end up, because they've got the Ark of the Covenant, God is fighting his own battle. Just put the ark somewhere. And people all get sick and break out with hemorrhoids, and they don't want it. So they send it back. They put it on a cart with two oxen, pull it back down through the valley of Sorek to Beth Shemesh, and then the Israelites get it back. And the first thing they do is they touch it and kills one of the priests because they touch it. And so anyway, that all happens during Ichabod. Ichabod's name means the glory has left because the ark is gone. And that's another. Now, Abiathar and Jonathan, they end up working with David. Okay, there's the tabernacle. You're familiar with this. This is the tabernacle itself, the tent. There's the altar of burnt offering on the outside, the bronze basin here. God would live or exist, or his presence was back here on the Ark of the Covenant. And it is, you know, you'd see smoke, you'd see fire, you could see the voice. God would come to the entrance of the tabernacle and speak with Moses. It says that's how the Lord spoke to Moses from the tabernacle. And here's the lampstand, the table of showbread, the altar of burnt incense to give a nice smell. And then this would be a curtain here separating this. This is a perfect square right here with the Ark of the Covenant called the Holy Place. This is called the Holy Place. This is the Most Holy Place. And this is the outer court that's open to the sun. That's the tabernacle. There it is. That's what I was looking for. That's small. Now, the actual Ark of the Covenant is about, you know, this big. And they'd have, see the poles right here? And four priests would carry it like this. It appears the poles were on the legs at the bottom, not up here. And this is the cherubim with their faces covered, and the glory of God would appear here. And they'd put blood on the Day of Atonement once a year. They'd go into the Most Holy Place, a priest, and put blood on that right there to atone for the sins of the nation. So that's a little Ark of the Covenant. It's plastic. It's not, or it's some kind of, it's not really gold. There's the Ark. This is the Ark of the Covenant. That's the mercy seat. That was solid gold, hammered out of one piece of gold. These are some of my cuneiform tablets. That's a lamp. And there it is again, just sitting there. All right. Here we go. The failure of the tribes. Let's do this. Let's look at the book. Oh, boy. We're looking on the book on page 104, 105. Just want to show you what you've got in the book, because I'm going to show you a bunch of pictures, a bunch of maps, and kind of tell you the story. Are you okay? I mean, are you keeping up? I mean, okay, I'm not like, we have no idea what you, Tony, what do you think? Okay. Like I said last week, she's always sad when you all leave, and I have to ask her 1,000 questions about, she goes, well, I'm just trying to give a break. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like, well, even on the, you know, great talk shows, they take a commercial break, give the people a break, you know. All right. That was your break. We're back. We're back here in Generation Word Bible Study. Page 105, you got the cycle of sin there that we talked about. There you've got a list of the judges, not many of them, but it mentions the sin. They all were had a great potential, but Gideon ends up making himself an ephod, makes himself a priest. Abimelech slaughters 7 of his stepbrothers on one stone. It just continues talking about their failure of that group. Of the time of Judges was just a miserable time. It's probably the worst time of Bible times. It has to be one of the worst times, short of the flood. There's a picture of Shiloh where the ark is, or the tabernacles would be set. I showed you that last week and how that's being excavated. Okay, and there's, yeah, the location of that. There's David's city. Yeah, I think all these things right here I'm going to show you. I want to go page 111. All these other things I'm going to show you pictures of on the screen. On page 111, there's a nice overlay of where all the cities are in the stories. And so you can see Galilee, Israel. Oh, I was going to tell you this. When they moved the northern, when Assyria moves in 721, they move the scatter out the northern 10 tribes, the lost 10 tribes. They did that to every nation they conquered. And so they'd bring in people from other nations into northern Israel. So Israel was moved out somewhere, but other people were moved in. So there's, you know, probably some Israelites remaining because they didn't get taken. And so those people intermarried with the Gentiles. And that became a group of people that would turn to the New Testament. They're known as Samaritans. They're living in northern Israel, in the middle territory there between the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee. But they're part Jew, part Gentile. Their lineage has been lost. And so that's why the Jews that returned, they were trying to stay very pure. They wanted nothing to do with the Samaritans. And so Jesus, you know, stopped and talked to the Samaritan woman, which was totally radical for his time. They couldn't believe that he was talking to a woman publicly by herself, let alone talking to a woman who's not even a Jew, and Jesus having a conversation with her. And anyway, that's that map there. Okay, then the next page, page 112, there you've got the thing I just showed you, all the kings listed there. And then it goes through and kind of describes all the events of all the kings, going up through page 119. And especially the last few kings are kind of interesting. All right. So here we go. Picking up now with, I've got a bunch of maps. I made these maps in 1987. Okay. So if you're looking at these, go, this looks comical. Yep. I made them with a pencil, a very sharp pencil, and I made copies. Even got my Galen Games logo down here. This is the failure of the tribes. This is the book of Judges, Judges chapter 1, verse 21 through 36. And it describes how they failed, how they did not. Like right here, Asher did not drive out the Canaanites in these cities. Right here, it tells you that. It says right here, the Canaanites remained with Zebulun, but did labor. They didn't get kicked out, but they had to do forced labor for the people of Zebulun. That's not what God says. Didn't say, wait, go in there and then conquer those people and make them your slaves. He says, drive them out. Kill them. I don't want them here. Manasseh did not drive out these Canaanites, but had them do forced labor. Dan lived in the hill country. See, Dan was supposed to take the land of the Philistines. But the tribe of Dan, it's like, well, the Philistines got the beachfront. I mean, that's like, it's too hard. So they just lived up here in the hill country. This is like the mountainous region here. Then you're going to have the Shephelah with the hill country here. And then you got the coastal plain down here. They just stayed in the hill country, so they didn't have to deal with it. And so the tribes failed. After Joshua died, they didn't do it. And so the angel of the Lord, in Judges chapter 2, the angel of the Lord, we know him as the second member of the Trinity. This is an appearance, a theophany of God. It's just not an angel. This God is worshipped, or this angel is worshipped. This angel is treated differently. It doesn't say the Lord has said, the angel said, he gives the command. So you can do the study on that, but any orthodox study of this angel will lead you to the conclusion this is the second member of the Trinity. And angel is the word, it means messenger. It's God bringing a message. It's a theophany, which is God manifesting. He appears to the people at Boicum, which means place of weeping. Notice right there is Gilgal. Remember what Gilgal is? That's the place, the stones that Joshua took and put them in a circle there so you always remember how he got in. So Gilgal means the place of the circle. Boica means weeping. And that's where the angel says, okay, we're done. I'm leaving you. You're on your own. And these are the nations that the Lord left: the Hivites, the Sidonianites, the Canaanites, the Philistines, Perizzites, Amorites, Jebusites. Notice right here, Jebusites still control the city of Salem. The Lord left to test Israel. And all those that had not experienced war in the 40 years in the wilderness or in Joshua's lifetime, he said, okay, I'm going to leave these here so you all get a chance to practice war. He says that. So the Lord left to test Israel for those that didn't experience the war. The first judge that's mentioned is Judges 3, Othniel. Othniel's home is here in Debir. The king from up north up here comes down, and Othniel has to fight him and deliver his home territory. Othniel, then you've got Ehud. They're being oppressed by the Moabites. Remember the Moabites? They had trouble here with the Moabites earlier. That's where Balaam came down, and Balak was the king. Well, now the Moabites have come up over here and are invading, and Ehud makes himself a sword and goes down and says, I've got a secret message for the king, goes in, and he's fat, they said, and just plunges his belly, swallowed the sword, and then he escapes. And so Ehud delivers him, kills the king of Moab, King Eglon. So there's that story. This is just story after story. That's the same one. There's Deborah. There's a story of Deborah. Deborah reigned right here, right outside of Bethel, between Ramah and Bethel, right in there. And Tony, we've been there. We've looked down there. We've seen this place right here. And there's a palm tree there, and she judged Israel. They come and ask questions. Now, Shiloh's over here. Now, notice, there's no Jerusalem on here because it's Salem. You could call it Jerusalem if you wanted to. It's mentioned in ancient cuneiforms as it mentions Jerusalem, but it's called Salem at this time in the Bible. But Deborah goes up to Kadesh with Barak, and he has to fight the Canaanites up in this area. And this is where Sisera flees down the valley, and all that story takes place there. Again, we'd have to read the story. But again, Deborah leads the people in deliverance there. This is where she goes. If you go back here, Mount Tabor, right there. You see that Mount Tabor? Here's the valley where the valley takes place. They had chariots, iron chariots, that the Canaanites. And someone had moved up here, Keber, who was from the family of Moses' father-in-law, had transferred and began following the law, the God of Israel. And they came in the land, and they moved up here, and they got hired to help make the chariots. And these chariots, when it rained, Deborah has a whole song about her. And her, it would be a musical. If you read it in the book of Judges, it's a whole chapter of a song that Barak and Deborah break out in song, and they're singing back and forth. It's just like a Hollywood movie, like a musical. And they're singing these verses back and forth about how the Lord's riding the sky, he sends the thunder, he brought the rain. And it filled up the Kidron Valley, not the Kidron Valley, the Jezreel Valley right here. See, there's Mount Tabor. That little tree right there, that's Nazareth. Remember when we talked about back in Luke when Jesus was pushed off, when he got pushed off? This is Nazareth. They're looking down into the valley here. This is the Jezreel Valley, or what was called Valley of Armageddon. Jezreel Valley viewed from the east, northeast, from Mount Carmel. So I'm standing on Mount Carmel looking east, northeast, and there's Mount Tabor. This is where we got so muddy that the chariots didn't work, so they had to abandon their chariots and run. Sisera's chariot's going to get stuck, and he runs the general and goes to Jael's house and gets a tent peg through his head. Here's some actual iron bronze arrow points from this time period. There's another one. This is Gideon. Gideon is up in here. This is where the invasion's coming from. I told you that story. There's Oprah, right? Ophrah. There's the Valley of Jezreel, Mount Gilboa, the spring of Herod. That's where he had the men get the drink of water with his hand. That's the spring right there. I've seen that. So we could go through that whole story of Gideon setting with 300 men, the torches and the lanterns, and delivers the people. But then after they drive the people away, he has them all bring him some kind of gold and throw. He put a blanket on everybody, throw one piece of gold from their plunder in, and they took all the gold and made himself an ephod. Abimelech, another judge that takes place here. Tola and Jairus, just mentions where they come from. One's from Ephraim, one's from Issachar. Not really interrelated. They just had an event that takes place. These are just all the judges. Jephthah. And I'd love to go through these stories with you. I shouldn't even be showing you these pictures. I'm not going to go through them. But they end up with Jephthah. He ends up having to go across to Gilead and then comes back. And Ephraim wants to know why they didn't get his tribe didn't get asked to help. And they pursue him. And they end up having this battle right here. The people from Gilead came across. And they're trying to get, or the Ephraim went across here and they wanted to come back. And so they see some people are going back across to Gilead. These people are coming here. And they need to say the word Shibboleth. Because on one side, they pronounce, you know how people pronounce their S's different? They say Shibboleth. They say Sibboleth. So they say, yeah, you can cross if you can say Shibboleth. Yeah, Sibboleth. And then they'd kill them because they didn't say Sh. Because just say the word Shibboleth and we know where you're from. And so they all looked the same, so they couldn't, so they made him say Shibboleth. And that's, again, a fun time to be living right here. Three more judges, Ibzan, Elon, and like I mentioned him. Jephthah and Ephraim. Oh, that's the same map right there. Samson. Okay, Samson. You know the story of Samson. He's going to be born. He's promised. In fact, the angel of the Lord appears to Manoah's wife and says, you're going to have a son. And he lives around Zorah. There's the valley of Sorek. Has trouble with the Philistines. But he has several, he's going to fall in love with a girl from Timnah, a Philistine, and at his wedding, he has a problem. He then, at Ashkelon, he kills 30 men and takes their clothes. Gaza, he gets, you know, captured there, and he carries off the gates of the city. All kinds of stories about Samson and his strength. Gets his hair cut, loses his strength. There is the Sorek Valley. That is the Sorek Valley right there. There's Zorah. See right there, that's where his hometown was. This is taken from the place of Beth Shemesh. You're going to want to remember this because these same Philistines are going to capture the ark in a battle against Hophni and Phinehas and the people of that time. That's when Samuel was a young boy. And they're going to have the ark. And when they keep getting diseases from it. Okay, rats and hemorrhoids. That's it. Rats would overrun the city and they'd break out in hemorrhoids. And so they put it on a cart and they sent it back to Israel. And the oxen, they should have walked together. They were untrained. But yet, because of the situation, they just walked right up the Sorek Valley and stopped right outside Beth Shemesh. So that ark came back. See, the Sorek Valley goes down to Philistia, down to the Gaza Strip today. And it came right up here. It could have stopped anywhere right in here. And then everyone goes rushing out to look at it. And they're not supposed to touch it. Okay, tribe of Dan. Okay, after Samson, Samson from the tribe of Dan, they can't drive the field. They're too hard. So they decide to move north. They go up here to Lachish and rename it Dan. And it's an innocent people, and they're just going to slaughter them. They weren't supposed to. Here's Dan. Here's a photo of Dan from Google. These are pictures I've taken of Dan. Interesting, like there's the Canaanite gate. That was there in Abraham's day. That's the gate of Lachish or Dan. That's what they called it after themselves. That's a gate from the time of from Abraham. He would have passed by that gate. This trench is from 1967. That's the border into Syria. And so this is from the war with Israel. This is where their Israeli troops would be protecting their border and going down like World War I battling almost. But anyway, that's up on the north side there. Here's the Canaanite gate. Here's the Israelite gate. I'm going to show you that. The Israelite, they built this gate. Here's the stream. And this is the golden calf shrine. It's amazing. I told you the golden calf in Bethel that Jeroboam's going to leave Judah and go up north. He's going to build this shrine right here, and you can see it. And we'll look at that again. I got some pictures. Oh, here's a terrible story. I don't even want to take time to tell it. Oh, we got time. A Levite and his concubine. Okay, a Levite, which should be a Levite and his wife, but no, she's just a concubine. And they're traveling, and he goes up into the land, goes from Bethlehem to Jabesh. That's going to become Jerusalem. And in Gibeah. And the men of Gibeah were just like the men of Sodom. I mean, that's how fast they're like, they want to have sex with someone. And so he sends his concubine out. And it says in the Bible, and I'm sorry, you can read it, Judges 17 through 19. They raped her all night long. And when he goes out, she's laying on the threshold with her hands on the threshold, and he steps over her and says, "Come on, let's go." And she doesn't move. So he realizes, well, she's dead. So he says, "Should something like this have happened in the land of Israel in here?" So he calls all 12 tribes to war against the Benjamites, because the Benjamites were the sexual predators in this story. We had Sodom and Gomorrah right over here. We've got the law of Moses trying to clean this whole act up. We're driving out the people that are all morally corrupt. And now here's Benjamin raping this guy's concubine, but he didn't have enough sense to protect her. I mean, it's like this story's wrong on so many levels. So he said, "Well, that's not right." He says, "This should not have happened in Israel. They shouldn't have killed her," or whatever. I'm not sure where his level of anger begins, you know. But he cuts her up in 12 pieces. I mean, any intelligent, how do you get a response? You cut up in 12 pieces, and you send a piece to each of the 12 tribes and says, "Should something like this have happened in Israel?" And all of Israel says, "No, no." And so they come down and they start killing all the people of Benjamin. And it gets to the place where they've almost eliminated the tribe of Benjamin. They go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, stop. We've almost killed the entire tribe." So they say, "What we need to do is we need to get wives." There's like, you know, just a handful of men left. "We need to get wives. Okay, so here's what we're going to do." In here, where is it? Somewhere, Ramah, Gilead. I don't know if I got it on this map, but there's a town there that has a May Day party. All the girls go out and dance around the pole for May Day or something. What you guys will do is just hide there in the trees, and when the junior high girls come out and dance around that May pole or whatever, you know, whatever age they are. I mean, they're little girls dancing around, or girls, or young women. I mean, I don't think they're like, you know, 40-year-olds and grandmas dancing around the pole. Then you go out there and you grab one and take her home, and that'll be your wife, and you can produce with her and rebuild the tribe of Benjamin. That's another good idea. Now, you understand, one bad idea, Levite and a concubine traveling, no direction. They stop at a place where someone else, they just want to rape her. So he says, "Oh, okay, go ahead and do that." She's dead. He cuts her up. We've got to stop without behaving like this. So they destroy almost the tribe of Benjamin. How can we save the tribe of Benjamin? Go kidnap a bunch of girls and have children with them. Okay, great idea. It's like, that's the fourth generation type thinking. You're just going from one stupid thought to another. Anyway, that's what the book of Judges is scary stuff. I mean, I don't like the book. Well, it's fun to teach. I'm talking about it. But it's Israel fights. Israel fights the Benjamites. So they all come down here and they fight them. Oh, Mizpah, right here. That's where they come down here. So that's Israel coming at them. And this is now Ruth. The book of Ruth takes place about, now it's a separate book, but again, you can kind of time it when it fits. They go over here and leave the country because there's a famine land, and the guy marries a Moabite, has his children, comes back, and she comes back with him. And Ruth, who is remember how bad the Moabites are? Ruth is one of the Moabite women. And she comes back, and she's going to become the grandmother of David and the great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of Jesus. And so there's the whole story there, and that's Ruth chapter 4. So you can read this. Naomi and Ruth. Naomi goes, returns to Israel. There's the people all involved. So that's the story of Ruth. And that's the whole book of Ruth takes place during the time of Judges. Now Samuel's childhood, right here in Ramah, that's the lady Hannah, doesn't have a child. And her husband's mad at her because he keeps saying, "I want to have a child, I want to have a child." He goes, "What, am I God? Can I control that?" And so she goes to Shiloh, to the tabernacle there, and prays. That's where we talked about Eli, the priest, going, "You drunk women can't be in the tabernacle here. This is Hophni and Phinehas keep bringing you guys drugs, and you're smoking it up here." Now, I added that part right there. But Hophni and Phinehas are sleeping and drinking with the temple women, which, again, where do the temple women come from? They came from the pagan culture. And so anyway, Hannah goes there, and she's promised, Eli says she'll have a son. The Philistines are causing trouble here, so they get beat in battle. Israel goes off in battle and gets beat. So after several times of being defeated by the Philistines, they say, "You know what we need to do? We need to take the ark." I've told the story. So they take the ark out there. They lose again, but the ark is captured. The Philistines capture and return the ark. It goes down to these cities. It goes to Ashdod. It goes to Gath. It goes to Ashkelon, Gaza, and finally to Ekron. And then they finally say, "Okay, we're tired of this. Everybody's got rats. Everybody's got hemorrhoids, And so they put it on a cart with two oxen pulling it that just got weaned from the calves. And they pull it right to Beth Shemesh. I just showed you the Shorek Valley where they came to right here. And they take it to a, so one of the priests touches it because it starts to rock. And they take it and put it at Abinadab's house. And Abinadab just has the Ark of the Covenant at his house. And he starts to prosper. And everything starts working out real because God's presence, because God's presence is in that Ark. Again, it's not a magic box. It's God's presence. Okay, there's the Shorek Valley. That's, I showed you that before. That's where the ark came. That's Tony holding the sign. Samuel then subdues the Philistine. He organizes some battle. Now, Samuel grows up, becomes a prophet, actually takes over the priesthood. He's a prophet acting like a priest because he's trying to get things back on track. Israel asks for a king. That's where they ask for someone. And so Samuel anoints Saul. There's a whole story about how Saul gets chosen. He's head and shoulders above everybody else. He's going to be a great king. And so he gets away. We could go through that whole story of Saul. He's out looking for his father's donkeys and ends up here at getting lost. He lives in Geba. I'll show you the place right here in a minute. Saul, first they're having trouble with Jabesh Gilead right here on this side. They're invading, causing trouble. So Saul, his first battle goes from Gibeah. That's Saul's home. He's introduced to the people at Mizpah. That's a holy site. And then Saul goes to battle against Jabesh Gilead, wins the battle, and comes back and is reaffirmed as king, and everybody's excited about how great this is going to be. Now, there have several things. Saul's got a son named Jonathan, becomes David's best friend, and they do battle together. He attacks the Philistines, and Samuel rebukes Saul. Now, what was supposed to take place is Saul was supposed to... there's 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and with the Philistine soldiers coming over, invading in this area, invading basically Benjamin. And Saul's has to get the battle won, and Jonathan ends up being the one who wins the battle. He climbs a cliff and sends these people, they flee. And Saul is supposed to go to Gilgal, place of the stones, a holy site, and wait for Samuel to make an offering. And all the troops are there waiting for Samuel to show up. And this is a test, because Saul's the great man. He's just won the battle with his son Jonathan's help. And he's waiting, and he gets to the place where it's like, we can't wait. I'm not sure what happened to Samuel. So he offers the sacrifice himself, and Samuel walks up and says, what are you doing? There's this place, Gibeah of Saul, Gibeah. We'll look at some pictures there. And he says, God has rejected you as king because... He didn't wait. He didn't trust. He went from the wisdom of God, says, I don't know, the wisdom of man. Well, now you're right back to where you're right back to the book of Judges. And so he was rejected, and he said, we'll find a new place. See right there? We'll find a new man. Gibeah of Saul, that's where Saul comes from. There's Geba, Jerusalem. And here is, again, viewed from the high place of Geba. This is a very high place. There you can see Geba. You can see Ramah. This is where Samuel, that's where Hannah was from, Geba, and then the high place of Gibeah. So there, that's where Saul's from. Same place right there. Jonathan is armor bearer. This is where they have a battle with that. Saul defeats his enemies. He's delivering it. He's doing his job. He's rejected his king. Samuel then goes to anoint David. You know the story possibly. Samuel lives in Ramah. He goes down to Bethlehem to anoint a son of Jesse. And you know the story. He's got, is it eight sons? And he brings in all seven of them. And Samuel's, you know, waiting for the Spirit to choose one. They're all ridiculous. He says, God did reject all of these. We got one, the youngest one, but he's out with the sheep. He goes, well, no one's moving until we bring in. And sure enough, that young boy, David, was the king that was going to be chosen by God through Samuel. And he's just a young boy. But now he's still with the sheep, and Samuel and everyone who goes out here, they're facing the Azekah, right? Here's the city of Azekah. They're facing the Philistines, and they've been there for 40 days. You know the story. I'm wrapping up here in 2 minutes. We have to pick this up next week. They're waiting for 40 days, and they haven't engaged the battle yet because the Philistines are on one side of the valley. Right here, you've got Azekah, and you've got right here the valley. The Valley of Elah is what it's called. I'll show you a picture. I'll show you where they're stationed, too. Well, you know the story. They go out and they form their battle lines each morning. Israel on that side, Philistines on this side. And then the Philistines have a champion. He appears to be a giant. Now, there is in the book of 1 Samuel, there is a chapter that talks about names of the giants, how big they were and how many they were and where they come from. And they seem to be like a remnant of, you go back to, you know, the Nephilim or something like this. And they have, like I said before, I have a book downstairs, a very theological, solid, from a university that records, I just got one footnote, that they have excavated in Philistine territory bones of 10-foot people. That it's like they're there. But anyway, there's this giant comes out and he says, fee-fi-fo-fum, and challenged him, and none of them will fight. Now, he's their champion of the Philistines. Who's the tallest and the champion of the Israelites? Well, the reason he was chosen to be king was he was taller than everyone else, Saul. He's their champion. So this should be a battle between King Saul and King Goliath. And King Saul's just sitting in his tent. And everybody just, they won't, 40 days. Well, David's watching the sheep in Bethlehem. I don't know if he's 14, 17, I'm not sure how old he is. But he's supposed to take bread to the brothers. And his dad, Jesse, sent him out, you know, check on your brothers, here's some food for them. Because they weren't government, you know, expense, so they had to bring their own food. And so the family had to bring some. So David goes off and he goes, here's the giant, here's Goliath. He says, what are you guys doing about it? It's like, well, no, we're not doing anything. And he goes, why do you let him insult, you know, the whole kind of story? He says, I can do it. And so someone hears David talking to his brothers, make fun of him. And someone goes to Saul and says, hey, someone says they'll go fight him. And it's like, oh, finally. And so they bring David. And he goes, you're a little boy. Not little boy, you know, but you're just a kid. He says, I can fight him. I mean, I fought the bear, I fought the lion, and he's going to fight with sling stones. I mean, he's done this kind of stuff before. He's just protecting the sheep. And Saul then puts all of his armor on him, and it's, you know, this big clunky armor. It's too big. He goes, I can't go in this. He says, I'll go without that. And he goes out, and Goliath says, you know, you come at me with sticks and stones. And David says, you know, I come at you in the name of the Lord my God, and ends up, you know, just and basically takes a pistol and shoots him in the forehead and falls down and cuts his head off with Goliath's own sword. And here's that place right here. This is it. I'm standing on the tell of Ezekiel right here. That's one of the cities that'll come up later on in the Bible stories. This is the valley. This goes towards the Gaza Strip. This comes in like this and hooks around. That's the Valley of Elah. And that'd be, you know, that's where the roads would be. In fact, right there, see the road? There's a road going right there. The Valley of Sorek, where the ark came in, we sat there before on the tell right there at Beth Shemesh. We sat on the tell of Beth Shemesh. I picked up a lot of potsherds there. And just watched the train go right down the valley. There's train tracks going right down the valley. Just watch the train just go through. So this is where they traveled in the valleys. They still travel in the valleys. Well, here's the Valley of Elah. This is Ephes Damon. This is where the Philistine camp was at. There's a creek right here. I should have brought a picture of the creek. There's still a water bed. You know, it's like there's a low place, always has the water running. And here's Sakah in Judah. And here's Saul's camp. So Saul's camp was here on this side of the hill. The Philistines were on this side of the hill, on this side, looking across the valley. And there's the stream right there. Now, I picked up some stones. I got five stones I picked up in the creek there, just like David did. I've got them downstairs. But it's not my story, but someone that had gone to Israel before I'd gone there, and I didn't even thought I'd get to go. That's probably back in 1980s or something. And they said they're at this place, and they said to the tour guide that was giving them a tour, they says, and they saw people picking up stones in this creek, and they go, should we be doing this? He goes, oh. He says, they bring out a truckload every month. And so, yeah. And they did look more like, you know, gravel rock than it does, you know, like stream rock. But there's the brook. The brook is right here. So that battle would have taken place. He would have went down here across the brook and met Goliath right here. And if you're sitting here at a valley or on Ezekiel right here, looking over the wall, you could have watched the battle. It happened right there. And then the Philistines fled down here, down this road right here, away from that battle. Here's David. Now Saul becomes jealous of David, realizing he's more popular, and he has to flee. David has to take his family down here to David takes family to the king of Moab. Why would he take his family to the king of Moab? Well, that's his, you know, that's his family. It's his Ruth's family down there. This is Ramah, where Samuel's from. Gibeah's where Samuel's from. Ramah, Saul's from Gibeah. Nob is where the priests meet, and Jabesh is coming up. That's where David's going to conquer that, and make that the capital city. David's from Bethlehem right here, and he goes and hides in the cave of Adullam. He hides in the cave of Herith, and eventually, after fleeing, he takes his family down here to Moab, and he goes over and over to Gath, and ends up, well, here he acts like he's crazy, but ends up fighting with the Philistines and going off into battle with the Philistines and helping them, because he's an enemy in his own territory. And when the Philistines go off to march against at Mount Gilboa against the Israelites and King Saul, they say, David, you can't go with us. So David has to go down and stay away while they go and kill at Mount Gilboa. They end up killing or wounding Saul, and he ends up dying. And now the way is open for David to become king. So there we have that story. So we went from 1380 to about 1000, we'll say 10 BC. Only missed it by 300 years. I'll have to wear my Syrian shirt again next week. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the history that you've recorded for us, that you've been faithful, following your plan, and that as we grow and as we learn, we can walk in your wisdom and avoid the wisdom of man that leads us to death and destruction, but walk in the things that you've called us to. And we do thank you for this opportunity to have the word of God, and ask that you allow your spirit to speak to us, to lead us and guide us, and inspire us with your presence and your word. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.